Hey guys, if you missed out on the last conference in Nashville, Tennessee, you don't want to miss out on the next one. It's April 28th through May 3rd, Orlando, Florida, the Gaylord Palms Resort and Convention Center. You made a mistake missing the last one. You don't want that to happen again on this one. 5 days of some of the best training you're ever going to experience packed into one event. We have an early bird special right now, $50 off. Use 24 early bird on our website, streetcop.com. Look for the conference, click the link, register today. If you want to get significantly better at this profession in 5 days, don't dare miss out on the 2024 Street Cop Conference.
111, 110. You trying to be a street cop?
Okay, hey guys, welcome back to the Always Forward podcast. And I've got my man Dennis from Street Cop Training. It's like actually called Street Cop Training, or is it just Street Cop?
I'm glad you've done your research.
I'm not a cop, dude. I don't give a shit.
Wait,
I don't
first
give
of all, can you try to say, we're going to play this game of, I'm going to try to say your last name.
Benaggio.
You're going to try to say my last name. And Mario, don't fucking cheat.
Benaggio.
Come on, dude. Come on.
Benigo.
Let's look at it. Let's think about it.
Benigo.
You're missing letters.
Yeah, bro. They don't make sense to me.
Okay, I'm going to try you because I have a lot of Greek friends. I know I did this last time. It took me a few tries at it.
Yeah.
Komalatsos.
Fucking nailed it, bro.
Yeah, I'm Benino, dude. So the G's silent.
That's right. Yeah. How the fuck am I supposed to know that?
I mean, he's in front of you.
I'm looking.
It's not Benigaro or anything you were seeing.
There's a G, bro. I'm looking at a G.
Yeah, it's the only thing you're seeing. You're blinded by the G.
Anyways, Jesus. Before we started recording.
Yeah, we are called Street Cop Training. That is correct.
That's what I thought, dude. But I'm looking at your shirt and it doesn't say training. Or I just can't
we
see
have,
it.
We have essentially copyrights and all that stuff on not only the phrase Street Cop, but also Street Cop Training. So it's they're like our website, streetcop.com.
You can go both ways. It's 2023. Yeah, well, you can go both
in marketing, yes. In my personal life, no. It's just not something. And by the way, if you go both ways, God bless. I hope you enjoy it. I don't yuck other people's yums. If that's your thing, great. It's not my cup of tea. Never has been. And, you know.
Well, dude, you guys are killing it, man. I saw the event that you did with my good good friend, Cody Alford. We have a lot of shared friends. You've done podcasts with him, Sydney Gordon from Core Medical Group, which you're coming down on the 5th to hang out as well down in Boca. And then our crazy friend, Tom DeBlas, who threatened to kill
Tom's
you.
A good dude.
Or me.
Yeah,
I don't
Tom's
know.
A good dude. So this day, it's been a long time since an adult male has intimidated me.
yeah, dude. He's intimidating. So long story short there, I came on your podcast right before he did. And I told you to tell him, like, hey, because when we were up there, he goes, there's nobody in the world that's passing my guard. Like, it ain't happening. You're not passing my guard. If you don't know who Tom DeBlas is, go check him out. Great man, but a little crazy. And so I told Dennis, I said, tell him I'm going to pass his guard next time I see him. So he told him that, but I guess he didn't know who said that.
Not only did he say that nobody's going to pass his guard, he's like, I'll let you fucking try to pass the guard of my fucking girlfriend. And you're not going to, and I was like.
Yeah, probably not going to pass her guard either, honestly. She's
good, huh?
Yeah, she's a badass. Yeah. She's a badass as well.
Anyways. I go to, I bring my kids to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu like 3 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm around some pretty bad dudes. Like, it's New Jersey, so everybody here is like, I guess in the BJJ world, they're almost like the creme de la creme, the old DOGs.
Yeah, up there, so, for sure.
Yeah, so like a lot of the people who hang out, like literally Monday, Frankie Edgar was at the gym. It's Dante Rivera who owns the gym.
Yeah.
Dante's a fifth degree guy now. So is Tom, right? They all got the blessing from the Godfather.
Yeah.
We have Phil Maglarese is now like a good friend of mine. You know Phil Maglarese?
No. I mean, I know of him.
Phil's going to be, yeah, you know of him, but Phil's a Philly guy, badass fucking fifth degree black belt, going to Coral Belt soon.
Dude, these guys, so I just came back from Origin Camp, and I think everybody there was like fifth degree or above. And these are, you know, and I'm not young, you know, I'm 41. These guys are older than me. And bro, it's like fighting, being a 3-year-old boy and fighting with your dad. That's what it feels like. And I'm not a small man. I'm strong. And I'm like, what is the point of this? Like, what are we doing here? This is fucking pointless.
What kind of belt do you have?
I'm a blue belt. I'm like dipping my toe into purple, but you know, right now I'm a blue belt. I'm going to stay there for quite a long time. There's no pressure here. You know what I mean? It's a good place to be.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. But then you go train with those guys and you're like, I don't know shit. This is pointless. You know, they got both my arms tied behind my back. They're like petting my head, you know, bonking my nose. I'm like, there's nothing I can do.
Right. You know what's crazy, dude? Even the other instructors at this school, one's Professor Susan and the other one's this other guy. And, you know, they're both second degree black belts.
Yeah.
And so Rich Bruno, who's one of our instructors here, just firearms, he just recorded a podcast of his own right before we took the studio back from him. He made a joke with him. He's like, you know, dude, he's like, imagine going to like a grocery store and seeing this woman in the parking lot. And like, you get into it with her. He's like, she'll kill you, dude. I've sparred with her. Right, he's like, she'll fucking kill you. He's like, she's like, you know, she's probably 46, 48 years old. He's like, I've rolled with her, dude. She's insane. She's so fast. He's like, she'll fucking kill. She's a great professor. She's very good with the kids.
Yeah, yeah.
I really appreciate her tremendously. So I appreciate the school. You know,
yeah.
I don't know how it's supposed to be done, but my kids are like, I'm like, what do you like the best about jiu-jitsu? Like, we like getting yelled at. I swear to God. They like when he yells at them.
So they're definitely your kids.
Oh, dude. They're just like, so they fight me when tonight they have to go.
Yeah.
And you know, dude, I'm committed to it. Like they're committed to it. I can't do it, but I'm there to make sure that I'm, you know, like you're showing up, your dad's showing up.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're just like, it's what they like about him. That's very funny. They're he yells at us.
It's so fun. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause he's out of his goddamn mind.
Here's another, I'll name drop another guy. I don't know if you ever came across him, but, Alan Baker is, I think he picked up his fourth. I don't remember. I think he just picked up his fourth. He's a black belt, I believe, in almost every single martial arts discipline. But in jiu-jitsu, he just picked up, I think, his fourth. This guy is Alan, if you're listening to this, no disrespect, but he is a country bumpkin from Georgia. Like, in his 50s, country. If you saw him or met him in person, you'd be like, this guy is no threat. That might be one of the most dangerous individuals. And he does a lot of, he teaches, that's how he kind of came up in this. He actually teaches a lot of law enforcement and tactical training and gun retention, knife stuff, all kinds of things. And yeah, dude, like he's one of those guys that if you saw him or bumped into him and heard him speak, you'd be like, this guy's not a danger. Yes, dude, he's a danger for you and everybody else in the room. So freaking fast.
It's rare that you meet somebody who is the top echelon in fighting that you would, I think just because in our minds, we imagine the toughest guys looking like Mike Tyson, right? Looking like,
that's, and he's a total anomaly. Total anomaly.
They've got like stand in purple belts that help with the kid classes.
Yeah.
And you know, like I said, Rich has been going to them. Rich's kid actually is a gray belt. He's 9. He's very fast. It's very impressive to watch. I have, you know, my kids are decent. They've been going about a year now. The older one who does go, he's very intense because he's an emotional fuck. So when it's on, like when he's sparring, he's like a psycho. Right? He's got real fucking problems. Let me be very clear on that, right?
Well, I'm glad you have an emotional kid. Then. Yeah.
Yeah, no. So I always tell him, and he's like, he takes it very seriously. Doesn't want to go all the time, but when he's there, he's like fucking locked in, dude.
Yeah.
And so, you know, just like, guys, I know that sometimes you don't want to go, but your life is going to be so much easier at 14 because of this than anybody else's, because you're never going to have to worry about what somebody's going to do to you. That's probably the biggest fear that every man has from probably 12 to 18.
Yeah.
Is who's going to kick my ass? Because that's the ultimate threat in school.
Right.
Right. I'm going to get my ass kicked.
Yeah.
When I was a boy amongst men, dude, I couldn't I'm not saying I can't fight because I could, but I didn't have like a growth spurt till I was like 17 and a half, right? Like no bullshit. Like I graduated high school and grew like 4 inches and put 35 pounds on in like a year.
Damn.
So I was a fucking baby and there were dudes in 9th grade who had fucking 8-inch cocks and full beards, right?
Yeah, right, yeah.
You know, so I'm like, how, these are men and I was a little boy.
Yeah.
right? They're, I mean, they're out way. I was 153 pounds when I graduated high school. I was 187 a year and change after it. Well, I started hitting the gym, dude, because I like wanted to get better looking girls.
Yeah. See, I did that.
Crazy shit as it worked.
I did it at 14. It's amazing, right?
Dude, I'm telling you, bro, like,
you know what it is, though?
My mind.
You know what it is?
Yeah.
It's a confidence thing. You felt more confident. Probably had, I mean, yeah, 30 pounds maybe might help a little bit, but it really comes down to, I think, a confidence thing. You were just a more confident male. That's it.
I think we all are when we feel like we look better.
Yeah. If I can take my shirt off and I've got abs and walk around here with my shirt off and I've
I know you do. I follow you on Instagram, Nick.
Like, dude, like, you
I know you
saying?
Got a delicious stomach.
It makes you more confident. You're like, fuck, I can do whatever. Anyways.
But you know, but like I go in reverse, like the psychology of like, I wanted this, so I was willing to do what it took to get that. And so every day.
Go ahead.
That's it, dude. That's the story of my life, man. I just like literally, if I'm going to do this, it's going to happen.
So let's get into that. Let's get into just that right there. So how long were you, obviously, you mean you weren't a cop, right? You just started a cop training program. You never actually served.
I appreciate the history research you've done before we started this program.
No, I'm just kidding.
I was a cop. I became a cop when I was 19. So yeah, I was in law enforcement for 14 years.
Yeah. Tell me about that. We talked about it on when you had me on a little bit, but I want to dive into a little bit more.
Yeah. So, you know, essentially, dude, now at almost 42 years old, you really, I'm sure you do the same thing. You're 41.
Yeah.
Just this constant reflection on who we are, who we've been, and analyzing like who I was as a kid, who I was as a teenager, who I was in my 20s, and who I was in my 30s, and who I am now.
Yeah.
And so we kind of like, this will happen to everybody who's listening. You'll turn 40, and you'll start trying to really understand who you are. Crazy shit. So weirdest, everybody does it too, especially people who are, right?
Yeah. So, it's actually, I think it's a very beautiful thing because I feel like you turn 40, and if you're living right and you're doing the right things, it turns into like wisdom. That's really where the thoughts and everything comes into play. It's really, you know, you start developing a lot of wisdom.
Yeah, you do, dude. And it actually brings a lot of value to a lot of people. Yeah. So, and if you have wisdom and you think it's good, or you are experiencing feedback that it is good wisdom and people find it appreciative, like even for our podcast, you know, podcast has done very well. And so people say, you know, how's the podcast done so well so quickly? Well, you know, there's some semantics behind it for sure. Yeah. We already had an existing following, but the reality is, there would be a lot of conversations behind the scenes here in my personal life that were so valuable. And like, man, we should really get some of this stuff.
So,
because if three people are like literally calling me all the time to try to get more advice,
right?
Imagine how all these other people would feel. And so with that's a lot of responsibility of making sure I'm compassionate, have a lot of humanity, and really try to make sure I deliver the message appropriately. So I put a lot of thought into that.
Yeah. So it's funny you say that because in my mid to, you know, early 30s, I got out of the military, stopped contracting. I did do kind of what everybody else was doing. I started media. I mean, I went to film school. I got a master's in business entertainment. So I did the whole social media thing. I did vlogging and at the time it was fun, right? It sorted me well. It's how I kind of landed on the map. But I started getting in my late 30s and then I hit 40 and I was like, you know, it's not what I want to put out anymore. It's not where my head's at. It's not where my heart is. And my heart was these conversations, right? It was like you just said, it was the conversations that were happening behind closed doors that we were developing people and the things that I was not sharing on social media that really makes an impact. And so when I hit that age group, you know, 39 really, I was like, and I just pivoted and people didn't really like it all. Not at first, you know, it's changed now, but it was a rough transition. Cause I just kind of full stop on the other stuff. And I said, no, let's start having adult conversations. And that's what it turned into. But
I think being you is probably the best advice I can have for people.
Yeah.
In their pursuing of their life is just, you don't got to pretend to be somebody else because you want to try to get somebody else to like you.
Unapologetically, authentically you. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, unapologetic is an interesting word. I don't think you have to be apologetic if it's genuine. And I think sometimes there is times to apologize because maybe we don't deliver our message in the fashion that we would have liked to at least been able to get our point across in. So,
well, that's a good point because you're going to say, you know, if I do X amount of podcasts a year, and X amount of videos. I mean, we're shooting, an absorbent amount of content. a week. I mean, throughout the year, I'm probably going to say some dumb shit somewhere. You know what I mean? Somewhere.
I mean, dude, I was at a bad place and I was asked to speak in an event, and you know, really, I found out it wasn't as, and again, I don't think it was as bad as I, you know, it was, I'm a funny guy. So I went in front of 650 people and said shit that I would say to my friends, and because they were my friends, and it ruffled some feathers. And you know, honestly, I don't wrestle with that too much. What I do understand about that moment is I've learned a lot about judgment, because I was in a very bad place at that time. And so when I see somebody do something that seems uncharacteristic of what you would expect from them, you know, there's not a quick, I'm glad it happened, because I don't quickly judge people. I just want to know, hey, what was going on that made you do that? And if you're apologetic, like, you know, same thing with bringing this up on every podcast I've done, this country singer, Zach Bryan, who was arrested. This is a recent thing. You know, my first thought was, what's this guy going through? I remember Shia LaBeouf years ago had really some choice words for law enforcement during the time that law enforcement was an easy target for everybody.
Yeah.
And I remember somebody else from some other organization really spent a lot of time like, fuck this guy, fuck that guy. And, you know, I'm looking at him going, man, this guy's in a lot of pain. You know, and I don't think it's the law enforcement thing that's really the subject matter of his. I think he's just anywhere he can go with this projection of pain, he's going to go. So let's not take it personal in that sense. You know, and if you apologize and said, and you know, the guy, you see this guy, he's been on podcasts, gets very emotional, and what he has been through. It's a very difficult journey for people. So I think it takes a lot of.
Yeah, he was, he actually went on the Real Ones with John Berthenol and talked a lot about that and how he was in a lot of pain and dealing with a lot of shit and how he,
I saw it a mile away, man. And, you know, I've been through so much pain that I know what it looks like. So when I see somebody do something, man, I got to tell you, almost every single time I try to find compassion, it's very rare that I can't find compassion for a human being and at least stop before I cast judgment and say, what caused this?
There's always layers to it.
Yeah. Outside of like homicide. Homicide, I just don't. Like, I don't know how I can get behind anybody taking the life of another person and feel their pain. Unless they were like, this is the guy that raped me as a kid, so I shot him. Like, I get that, right? We should have a lot of compassion for that. But, you know, like the dude who kills his girlfriend because she, like, left him. That dude's a fucking scumbag, right? Yeah, you don't take somebody's life.
You're mine now, bitch.
Yeah.
So going back to that. All right, 14 years, 19 years old, you became a cop. Why?
You know, dude, this is a good question. And the reason it's a good question is because I don't know if I have the answer.
It doesn't have to be a good answer. It could just be like, I thought it was cool. Yeah, whatever.
I think the answer that I have will probably may change in the future because I continue to discover things about myself.
Yeah.
Right? I had a breakthrough with my therapist last night. And actually, she didn't even say it. I'm like, I know the answer. You prompted it. I know what it is. And she's like, oh my God, that's exactly right. I didn't even have to explore that. I'm like, no, I acknowledge it. She's like, you know, you come here and I say these things and I don't want you to feel offended. I'm like, Kathy, I come here because I'm looking for answers. Like, I want to know why I can't cry.
Right.
Right. That was the question last night, to be honest. I'm just like, what? Why can't I cry? And so we went into my childhood. Dude, everything comes back to your childhood, right? I grew up in a fucked up family.
Yeah.
And so when I was able to discover it, when she offered three things of possibly why, I was like, oh, I know why. Now I know. And she's like, holy shit. That's exactly it. That's why you can't cry.
Did you get a discount on that session since you like self?
Nah, she does a lot of good work. I want to get the money, you know? Okay. I don't mind paying the fucking whatever it costs, dude. I don't know. It's a lot. I know because she's an expensive one. So it's got to be at least $200, $250 a session.
Hey, dude,
like that.
That shit's worth it. You got to pay for it.
Man, I got to tell you, bro. Like, and you know, just it's good to have somebody in your corner, and I think it's good for everybody to try to discover what they're made of, where they come from, with the intention of being the best human being they can be. Because that's why I go, dude.
Yeah.
I want to be the best father, the best friend, the best husband, the best human being, the best neighbor, all these things. So if I can understand that there are certain things that I can do to become better, well, I'm with it. Or help other people, to be quite honest with you. A lot of stuff that she tells me, I've been able to take and impose on other people. I'm like, hey, you know, you're dating the same person over and over again. It's failed three times. And people are like, what do you mean? I'm like, you're dating your fucking childhood. You're dating yourself. And like, I don't understand. I'm like, that girl, she's you. But she's an abandoned person. You don't want to turn your back on that abandoned person. You keep picking up these fucking shelter dogs that have been beaten that, like, yeah. will sit with you. But you know people that have the dog like, we rescued, you know, Sheila.
Yeah.
She's a great dog, but nobody can pet her except me and John.
Yeah.
Right? Don't go near her. I'm like, so you got the dog that'll sit on the couch with you, but you can't bring around anybody else, which it's remarkable. And it's fine for you to do that and have compassion. But when you're talking about going down the road of engaging in a long-term relationship with somebody who is, you know, and I hate to say it because it sounds so awful, but like they're not trying to help themselves. If they're trying to help themselves, that'd be one thing, but they're really quote unquote unmarriable.
We talk about that in the Squire Project to young men, how like that is the, like you don't get to choose your parents. You don't choose your kids. The choice that you do choose is your significant other. And that might be the most important decision you ever make in your life because it can make it and break you.
Bro, like I'm watching people now. So, you know, you're 41. I'll be 40. Were you born 81 or 82?
82.
So I was in 81. I mean, I'm not trying to compare us. Yeah. I'm just saying we're very close in age. We're pretty much the same age. Now, at this point in my life, I'm watching these girls and these men mm-hmm. who have all made those earlier bad decisions and now paying for it mm-hmm. significantly on the back end, right? Child support issues, divorce issues,
yep.
money issues,
yep.
criminal domestic violence issues. So when you take that short, you're not employing that discipline, right, to say, okay, I get it. I'm a compassionate person, but I can't rescue this motherfucker. So I've got to find somebody who doesn't need to be rescued. You know, the long-term reward of having that kind of discipline is significant, and you can't see it up front. You can't. Try to figure out how to get about 10 grand to retain a fucking attorney so you can try to make sure you see your kids.
It's a negative snowball that just never stops. It just blows your whole life up. And then, then when it's really bad, men just turn to vices and they're trying to cope with all the situation. So it makes it even worse. You know what I mean? Oh,
okay. Yeah. Back to me.
Yeah. Let's talk about Dennis.
Okay. So, you know, I guess the preface of that was to try to understand me a little bit, but I always wanted to be a cop. I couldn't be a cop fast enough. I would have been a cop at 12 if I could be. I always admired, I'm an adrenaline junkie, right? So I thought, okay, this has got to be something that I can't stop, bro. I'm an adrenaline junkie.
Yeah.
I'm a purebred adrenaline junkie, and probably some of that has to do with my entrepreneurship skills. And I just, like, if you're like, yeah, we're going to go jump out of a helicopter, I'm like, what time? Like, and do you have a chute that fits me? But you've never jumped in and thrown a chute. I'm like, I'll figure it out, dude, in about fucking 10 seconds. Just show me what I got to do. So, you know, I really, really wanted.
FYI, it's the landing part that's the problem. Then it's just FYI if you ever get into that situation.
Yeah. But a combination of things probably. I'm a workaholic.
Mm-hmm.
But not because of, like, I'm insecure. It's what makes me feel the best is when I'm productive.
Yeah, I understand.
For real. Like, I can't. There are times that I have to sit. But generally, when I spend time with my kids, I don't generally typically like to sit and like watch a TV show with them. I'm like, yo, let's go fucking like ride dirt bikes and shit.
Yeah.
You know, my kids are pretty wild, too. They're obviously their mother's, you know, a lot of fun. I'm a lot of fun. We're a wild crew of people. They are energetic as fuck. It never ends, and I appreciate every moment of it. But I think I was really wanting to be or enter into something that was very selfless and wanted to be the courageous guy for those who needed courageous people in their life.
You wanted to be a courageous person.
For them.
Yeah.
I think I was a courageous person, but I needed to find myself a little bit as well mm-hmm. and the courage that I needed in my life. Probably could use a little more guidance, essentially, in some sense. But, you know, I think a lot of those things, but I hate bullies, dude.
Yeah.
Like, I can't emphasize it enough. I hate bullies profoundly.
Were you bullied?
Not a lot. But enough. I've experienced it. Like, I was a very popular kid. I was funny.
Yeah.
I was graduated class clown.
But you saw it.
Dude, I was sticking up for kids in high school when I was a senior and they were freshmen. I'd watch a freshman pick on another freshman. I literally have flipped the fuck out. But I was bullied by my father.
Yeah.
So I was bullied by my father terribly. You know what I mean? Like, so that probably had something to do with it. It's hard to say. My father's literally on his deathbed right now. I put all the bullshit to the side, and I spend at least every other night holding his hand for 2 hours.
Of course, it's your dad. At the end of the day, it's your dad. You know what I mean? Yeah.
In some sense, right? I think people have an excuse to be why they wouldn't be there with their father.
Sure.
But my father wasn't that bad. He's just a man who just never had emotional intelligence. I don't think he ever not cared or not loved us.
We just did a video about EQ,
I don't think anybody in my family has, to be quite honest with you. I think that I'm just a fortunate person that was able to be guided by others outside of my core circle of people that I was forced to have as a kid. But
yeah, same.
So I don't want to do a disservice, because the man wasn't a horrific human being. He's just a horrible bully, man. I'm gonna try to talk shit behind his back or as he's dying.
To their defense, you know, and you being a parent yourself, sometimes you just, fuck, man, we don't have it all figured out. Like, you do the best that you can do with what's the information you have and where you come from. And
well, I think having it all figured out versus how to react to situations are two very different things.
Yeah.
So,
but if he doesn't have the skills, and he didn't have the father, and he doesn't, you know,
he didn't have the skills. He didn't have this, you know, and I gotta be honest with you, I wouldn't be the person I am today without the mother of my children showing me how to be a father, because I didn't know.
Going back to being, very careful who you pick, right? Because it changes your life.
I remember their mother said to me one time, my oldest was 3, and she goes, "Can I just stop you there?" Because she'll intervene. She's like, "Can I just stop you there for a second?" And I'm like, "What?" Because we don't fight. And I'm like, "What?" She's like, "Are you trying to make sense to a 3-year-old? Is that what you're doing?" And I'm like, she's like, "Cause that's what I see happening here. You're trying to get a 3-year-old to try to speak like he's fucking 35. And you talk to a 3-year-old, just so we're clear. So why don't you just take a second to think about your fucking behavior and then tell me how you're going to communicate to a 3-year-old.
That's trying
and
to,
she
like,
gets me, dude.
That's trying to reason. That's like the same as reasoning with a drunk person.
Right.
This is going nowhere.
So, you know, even when my kids misbehave, I know there's humor behind it, or I know it's not directed towards me. So like last night, my daughter, she was hitting her brother with a, so I live in a community where some of the kids have farms.
Okay.
Right. We're 36 square miles. We have 13,000 residents. 10% of the kids my kids go to school with have farms. They have horses and fucking llamas and shit like that. And everybody's, you know, it's a little bit more of a well-off community. But not like Beverly Hills, dude. Just like everybody has a new fucking Yukon or whatever. You know, nobody's driving like a fucking beat up. I'm not trying to make fun of it. I'm just saying, like, to paint a little context, people have nice stuff.
Yeah.
It's you go to a party, it's never like, you know, like you go to a kid's first birthday party, or I'm sorry, a kid's fifth birthday party. It's never like, oh my God, are they going to have food? You just always know they're going to have 10 trays of catered food.
Yeah.
They're not going to have a private chef and flying people in. They're just going to have 10 because people are a little more well.
So
they're going to spend $500 on food at a kid's birthday.
Yeah.
But so this kid like gave my oldest a peacock feather. Instead of the 3-year-old's hitting the fucking 7-year-old with it while he's trying to fucking eat. And I just went, "Hey, leave your brother alone." And she like, because I don't yell, I just like that. And she like started crying. And then like, I'm like, it's a little bit of an act, you know. I really wasn't that serious, and so I went to go pick her up, but she starts like swinging at me. But I knew that wasn't like her being disrespectful. That's just her wanting attention.
Well,
right?
Maybe you embarrassed her, or hurt her feelings, but yeah.
She's processing it. But I don't have to be like, "Hey, you don't fucking hit your father, asshole!"
Yeah.
Right? Like I'm like, "Oh, you missed, you swung," and then she's laughing, you know. But we're not reinforcing negative behavior. This is dad letting her know that, like, I know you don't mean this.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to act like you mean this. Now, dude, if there was some crazy shit like that went down and like these kids were really out of control, I mean, got to correct that. But there's ways to correct it without being a fucking lunatic. And my father just never knew how to do that.
One of the things I do is I don't like him fight. I don't like him doing that with his mom. I'm like, "Nah, man, it's your mom. You're going to be sweet to your mom." I said, "You fight with dad." But that's turned it. That kind of bit me in the ass, because this kid wakes up and chooses violence.
Yes.
You know, first thing in the morning, he's like, "I'm ready to fight." I'm like, "Oh shit, we're doing it." I'm like, we're doing this. Got it.
My three oldest are boys, Nick.
Well, he's 3.
They,
Dimitri's 3, yeah. And he's choosing. He wakes up and chooses violence. He's like, "I think we need to fight. Here's the weapons." And he goes, he chooses the weapons.
But that's good. It's a healthy sign,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
But these three kids love to murder each other. It is their jam. So I don't stop it. This is them having fun.
Yeah.
You know what? They get hurt, and it is what it is.
Yeah.
And they get hurt good, dude. Like motherfuckers get fucked up. But
Dennis,
I don't stop it.
You got to keep your shit together, dude, because these kids are going to get big. And one day they're coming for you, man.
It's fine. They thoroughly enjoy.
All three of them.
They thoroughly enjoy killing each other.
That's
awesome. And I just, except like when we go see my father, and I'm like, guys, listen to me. Hey, listen up, fuckers. There are a lot of sick people here. You cannot fight in the hallways of this place. No, bro, a lot of these people are at the end of their lives, right? So they're still like, it's a really sad. Listen, I'm not going to hide my children from seeing their grandfather as he's passing.
Right.
Well, you know, like you're fucking three, six, seven, and nine walking into a place where people are in these chairs and they're like literally just like catatonic, you know, open mouths. And it's like a fucking scene out of a horror film going into these places for a kid, right? Like, what is going on here? And you know, just explain it to them, like, people are very sick. And they're, you know, they're, some of them are extremely old, and this is what happens sometimes when you get older, not to everybody, but to these people were very unfortunate. And, you know, your father, your grandfather's like that too. And, but still, they can't be fucking killing each other in the hallways of these places. You know, you're overwhelming. Even my father, who's really very unwell, very, very inundated with Alzheimer's, it gets him worked up even now on his death, but he's like, oh, everybody stop, right? Because they're murdering.
Because your 6-year-old's like, this is Sparta. And like, Frank.
We're like, it's war.
It's awesome.
Like, and they fuck. When I tell you that they are brutal. This isn't like some goofy, like I watch other kids fight and like they shove each other. Like these motherfuckers are. And dude, the two younger ones have been in jujitsu for a year. And like, dude, they're like, I'm like, set the hooks, right? And like, yeah. I'm like, yo, you got a minute to grab the choke, bro. But you'll watch it now. They're employing that shit on their older brother. Older brother's significantly larger than they are. And bro, like they're choking his ass out.
Show up to class more.
He won't go.
Well, see, there you go. He's gonna get beat.
Your little brother's gonna be having your back in high school, just so you know.
Yeah, his 3-year-old's gonna be beating him up. His 3-year-old little brother.
I know.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so 14 years, man. Were you with the same agency the whole time?
No, I went to 3 different agencies. I actually went to 3 different police academies.
Really?
Oh, shit. Yeah, when I was there, I would say, like, there's a reason why God has put me through this 3 times. And, you know, later on, here it is.
So...
I had to know how bad it was in order to learn how to fix it.
Is that what kind of happened? Like the first time, like this is not a great environment. I want to go to a different agency, or is it just an opportunity?
Oh, dude, like for me, the game is always, and this is how I live my life. And you know, Charlie Munger, who is Warren Buffett's associate, they both own whatever portions or majority portions of Berkshire Hathaway.
Yeah.
And so there are really a lot of things to learn from these guys, I think, just in life. So Munger talked about how he had worn so many different hats in his life, but he wouldn't recommend it to anybody because he understands that he's a very unique individual. And so the same thing for me as well. I'm not saying you shouldn't find a better place, but like, dude, I'm literally the Frank Sinatra song, That's Life. I've been a puppet, a pirate, a pover, a pirate, a pawn, and a king.
Yeah.
So you know, when I was somewhere, I'm just not the kind of guy that settles. Just that's not me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the last one married because I was going through so many women to try to find somebody that I would marry. I wasn't going to settle. Like 95% of my friends I know fucking settled. Right. And they're going to make it work because it just works.
Yeah.
And they'll disguise it with I'm in love with her, which is complete horseshit.
Yeah, of course.
Especially now 41 looking at these relationships, they're just complete fucking garbage. It's just a comfort factor and that maybe trauma matching and all, and you know, who the fuck knows what people are in relationships for. But yeah, man, I got hired. I'm like, yo, I don't wanna fucking stay. Like, you know, you hear it. As soon as you get in, get the fuck out. Don't be here. Don't be like, yeah, the guy's 20 years there. Mm-hmm. Don't get stuck here. Don't do what I did. I'm like, yeah, I'm gone. And so the next place I go back to an academy, and because I started in New Jersey, corrections is a sworn law enforcement position. I'm not trying to defend it, but I started in corrections at 19. It was at that time very hard to become a cop in New Jersey. Very, very difficult. And so there were no cop jobs, like literally 1,000 applications for one job at every agency. It was that nuts because dude, they were paying $100,000 a year. This is 2000, the year 2000 when I took my first test, right? So this is 23 years ago. 4 on, 4 off, 3 years to top pay is $100,000. I could have been a 23-year-old kid making $100,000 plus. The off-duty and overtime rates were crazy. Guys, you know, there were people getting on agencies making fucking $75 an hour at 22 years old, yeah, working off-duty. You know, so like there was a big and cops in New Jersey were like fucking God amongst men here. Were celebrities, dude. You could really do like you just everybody took care of you, right? You got a discount. You went. You beat every line. You got free shit. Like you, like people wanted to know you. Girls, forget it, dude. Oh my God, the fucking women with the cop being a cop in New Jersey.
What years was this first? Like 4 years. What was it?
I started in 10/9/01 was my start date.
Okay. Shit. Yeah.
So, I actually started right after 9/11 here in Jersey, and we're like 30 minutes from Ground Zero.
Yeah. So different scene. Yeah.
Well, dude, we didn't know what to expect because we were already done. The process was over. We were already starting the academy. And, you know, you're talking about 3 weeks earlier or a month earlier, we're still in this middle of this thing.
Yeah.
So as recruits go into the Bergen County Police Academy, which is literally probably the closest New Jersey Police Academy to Ground Zero, or one of the closest.
Yeah.
We had been told that a lot of recruits were moved and used to go work Ground Zero to sift through the rubble, rubble or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And so we're like, yeah, we're going. Like we were all like, yo, I guess we're going to Ground Zero for the first like 3 weeks to help out. And we were all on board. Like nobody knew about 9/11 cancer and shit like that. So, yeah, you know, fortunately enough, I didn't have to go. And I'm sorry for those who did and had to suffer the health consequences of that 9/11 related cancer. And but that's where we thought we were definitely going. And we didn't.
What was your first job?
I worked for the Department of Corrections. And I did that I started in October of 01. I left in April of 04. So beginning of April of 04. So I did about 2.5 years, including the academy there. I mean, literally, as soon as I walked in the door of that place, I was like, yo, I better get the fuck out of this place quick.
What was your next pick?
It was very hard to get on, and I think at that time USAjobs.gov came out.
Yeah.
And so the federal government was accepting work experience, law enforcement work experience, in lieu of college. I didn't go to college.
Never.
So
still to this day?
I did. My college professor was like, you don't need college to be a cop. And I'm like, what the fuck am I doing here that I hate school? I went to the civil service test, worked 2 full-time jobs, got picked up. Thought that would be like my quick in, but it wasn't. And then I actually started going back to college because there was an option that just started at that time here in New Jersey, something called the alternate route program, where if you had 60 credits, you could actually put yourself through the police academy. And it was very new and it was very, so I was like, oh, I'll do that. Like, that'll be my backup plan if I can't get picked up in this time. So I was actually working full-time plus and going to school full-time as well and paying cash for, back then, I remember paying like $300. I think it was $100 a credit for community college.
Yeah.
You know, I was literally going in, signed up for 4 classes every semester because I also did work full time, and literally just going up to the window at the registrar's office and, you know, your bill's $1,212. And dude, I was making, I think my starting pay is $27,500. And so I was making like maybe $700 every 2 weeks after taxes.
Oh my God.
It's like $680, something like that. So I was literally spending my money on college. And as a matter of fact, as I was wrapping my 60 credits is when an agency called U.S. Park Police came along. And so I had a choice between them and Customs. I was in process for both. They came to me first. And I just thought, well, I know what Customs is. I didn't know what this agency was, but I knew what Customs was. I knew it was going to be an airport stamping passports. All right. Well, I'm not trying to knock it, but I just knew that's what it was going to be. They told us that. Like, you're going to be an airport stamping passports. And if not, you're going to be running a beagle around fucking containers down the road in Elizabeth.
Oh, God.
Trying to find fucking produce. I'm not downgrading the significance of that job. There are people who typically start and they progress rapidly through
Joint Terrorism
Task Force. Yeah. I mean, I'm saying, but I knew. So, but I also knew that I had no idea what the U.S. Park Police was. I was just like, knew I wasn't going to jail anymore because it's the worst job on earth.
No, it's not. That's not the same thing as like a park ranger, obviously.
No, it's not. Actually, is the Department of Interior's Urban Police Division.
Okay,
so I don't know how many people they have now, but at that time they had like 900 cops that worked San Francisco, New York, and Washington, D.C. So they were like, hey, we're taking people to D.C. right now if you can go. And then in a year or two, you can come back to New York. And so it's a federal position. I could still maintain my Jersey residence to still keep myself eligible for New Jersey police positions, is where I wanted to be. So I went to the academy for that in Georgia. A lot of guys actually didn't take the job because they were NYPD guys with families.
It's federal, so you went to FLETC, right?
I went to FLETC, yeah.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, no, I had a great time. Best time of my life, to be honest with you. But let me not knock it. Like, still was training 6 days a week. We went 6 days a week to FLETC.
Yeah, of course.
And then we had only Sundays off. And so, you know, we still did. Although FLETC's not a place where there's drill instruction, there was some real challenging shit that they had in our program, at least. I mean, we were running. We were PTing. I went to an academy before. I got to tell you, I thought the PT at FLETC was comparable, if not more stringent because of the weather conditions in Georgia. Fucking hot, bro. I went between April and August.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. We're outside a lot. I remember like looking at the calendar and I'm like, what is this training? And they're like, we're going to be in the woods. And I'm like, what?
Oh, it's
100. Dude, they have these like, so all around FLETC, I don't know if they have this anymore, but they had these thermometers that were also barometers and they would come up with a mean temperature.
Yeah.
And so they were put out everywhere because they wanted everybody to know how hot it was and how dangerous it was.
Right.
They have different flags they raise, a black flag, yellow flag, red flag, blue flag. And I mean, every day we're looking at these things, 127 degrees out, 122 degrees out, 118, 125 every day.
And it's so humid. So
bro,
humid.
I lost weight. Oh, bro. I think I went there probably, I don't know, maybe like 192. Yeah. I was like 22 years old, right? I probably left there like 160.
Oof.
Yeah, like 165, probably something like that.
It's good training, plus, though, man. FLETC puts on good products, though. They got a good product.
Yes and no. I think it's better than what you typically get everywhere else, but I still think there could be a lot of things that could be improved.
Of course, everywhere you go, there's improvement, but across the board, they do a good job.
Well, I think the police should be, and this is what we do, is like, let's take what we know we're going to encounter as cops and then train for that.
Yeah.
Pretty clear. And so when we're training for things that aren't going to happen because they're just something to fill the time.
I remember, I know what you mean, because I remember being in the military, especially early days in recon, and we were still training kind of Vietnam tactics. I'm like, dude, this is not what we do.
You're not going to the jungle, right?
Yeah, we're not going to the jungle, man. We're going to the fucking desert. That's the reality of where we're at right now.
Or the mountains, right? The mountains, right?
And we did, and that's what we did. We went to the desert and we went to the fucking mountains of Afghanistan. So,
yeah.
Anyways. All right, so.
But, you know, I mean, in a nutshell, though, like I remember, dude, there was a lot of stuff that I will give credit where credit's due. FLETC was way ahead of everybody else. I went to two other county police academies here.
Yeah.
Eons ahead.
Yeah.
And resources and minds that were designing products that were better. They had a significantly better program, and people would argue and say, well, they don't have any drill instruction there. There's no military bearing. You don't need it for this profession, just so we're clear. You need challenge. You need to push people into being having perseverance, no question about it. But, you know, for me, like set up something like a Spartan style race.
Yeah.
Right. You guys got to finish this in a certain amount of time and you got to continue to improve on your thing. And it's not going to be easy. We're going to do it for 2 hours once a week. And people, that'll weed them out. You don't got to scream in somebody's face, dump their fucking equipment into a big pile, kick it around, and tell them they have 2 minutes to put it back into their lockers in order to gain compliance here. For police officers who are going to go out into the field, and the first thing they're going to deal with is maybe a kid who was raped, maybe a woman who was beaten, maybe a decapitated person in a bad car crash. I mean, first call I ever had on my own was a car crash. It was a Honda Civic into a telephone pole, double fatality, agonal breathing, people pinned in, a guy. When did we go over that?
Yeah, that's,
you know, I didn't even know how to use the thank God this guy that we worked with on the shift was a senior guy. Thank God he got there a couple minutes after we were there because he starts calling for a helicopter and like, we didn't know what to do. We had shit field training. I'm literally standing in the middle of a smoking teal blue Honda that's wrapped around a fucking pole trying to give rescue breathing to a guy who's having agonal breathing. It's the first time I've ever seen agonal breathing in my life. I don't know what to do. I don't know who to call. I'm figuring they're just going to send people and we'll be here. It's me and a brand new guy. And so we didn't know what we were doing.
Hey guys, follow us on all social media platforms to include Instagram, Twitter, Facebook group. We have so much information going out every single day, and we don't want you to miss out on any of that stuff. So check it out. Go give us a follow.
Mario's
How come we didn't go over that?
Mario's over here dying laughing because, go ahead.
Yeah, my first call was a dead body with zip ties wrapped around its neck on the side of the freeway. So I didn't had no
brand
clue.
New cop had nobody
had
there
no
with
no clue what to do.
You know, so like, but you could have, we could take 25 of the most common scenarios.
Yeah,
and literally just run that, like, just design training behind what we know we're going to run into. You know what I mean? Like, just let's be that thoughtful.
Yeah.
We're doing water rescue training because they wanted to say that they're the only academy that does water rescue training. Like, this is what we're doing. And I'm like, everybody here is working in an agency that doesn't have water. Right? Like, not one person from that academy over the years and years and years of water rescue training they did. Now, I'm not saying it wasn't. It was still knowledge.
Yeah.
But, like, dude, we were the only agency that had the Atlantic Ocean. We have a bay and some of the ocean. We weren't going into that. Like, nobody's jumping it. The muck in that fucking water, if you step in it, it'll keep you stuck. It's like cement.
Yeah.
So I had a girl one time, there was a dog drowning, and like the current was rough in the bay. And so this girl that I actually knew who worked for animal control says, I'm going to go in and get him. And I said, no, you're not. And she said, no, I am. I'm going to go and get the dog. And I go, I am telling you. That if you take one step forward, and I know you 20 years, I'm going to put you on the ground and put you in handcuffs. I'm not going to arrest you, but I'm going to hold you here. Because there is not a chance on earth I'm letting you go into a fucking current like that. I know you have two. I literally said this to her like in like 10 seconds ago. You have two fucking kids. You're not going for a Labrador, right?
Right.
That could be on its last leg as it is. It's not happening. The dog died. It is what it is. I'm sorry. But it was not worth her losing her life to go rescue a fucking 9-year-old Labrador.
Right.
Wasn't happening.
So,
but we weren't even going in, dude. We commandeer boats. Like when we have to do rescues and shit, they don't even have a boat for us. We literally run to the docks and scramble. You could research it, dude, from my agency. There were guys who had boats at the docks because they were like fished. And so like there was this thing like, hey, if anybody's got to use my boat ever, the keys are here. And they've run and just grabbed other cops' boats to go fucking perform rescues. And like, cause you think one person would have said, you know what? We should put a raft out there and teach 10 people how to use it.
I figure that's some poor planning on that.
They don't give a fuck, dude. Right? They don't give a fuck. They don't care.
So
they don't give a shit.
So your third one. What was your third one?
I don't want to say the name of the agency, but
that's fine.
The place where I wanted to work, the town that I grew up in.
Okay.
And so I was thrilled to be there. I was thrilled in the beginning. And, you know, I could not believe the equipment they had. Because I came from such, you know, I was at U.S. Park Place and they're just like, this place is terrible. Everybody should leave. And I'm like, it's good enough for me. I mean, dude, we didn't have cars that worked at the time. I know now they've gone into a agreement with a different entity of the government. So they actually join like the pool for like whatever they call the car pool. I forgot what they call it. But now they actually get like new, like they actually rotate their cars. But dude, I mean, I was driving. This is 2004. I'm driving a slick top Chevy Caprice with a flip down visor and this is how old this car was. Probably had 290,000 miles on it.
Holy
and the alarm the siren went like this. I'm not kidding you, dude. And so I didn't know Caprices existed. Last time I saw them was like the last time we saw them, I was probably like a freshman in maybe they were phasing them out probably like 95,
I was
gonna say, 93.
Early
now it's
2004
and they're still
dude,
and they're still rocking these things because they have no money.
Go wind up siren. You have to drive while you're cranking it.
We had to do a presidential escort or some kind of high level escort, and they're like, I'll never forget, they were like calling for guys, and like two of our cars broke. Trying to get out to we didn't have cars to go do this escort to provide security for them. What an embarrassment of this agency is like, they just like, you know, like we didn't have cars to drive. Sometimes we'd go in and like, hey, I'm on this beat today. Where's the cars? They're like, there are none. Like, well, what do you want me to do? Like, go get a bike or something, dude, just ride around or something. Well, dude, I'm not kidding you. So they were certifying guys on bicycles like a lot in droves because they didn't have cars.
So young Dennis was like, all right.
Dude, it was like they were like, we had these things called scooters. And so they were like 500cc, like mini bikes. And everybody got scooter training because they were so easy to maintain. They were resilient. They didn't have sirens or horn, nothing on. There was no light sirens, nothing. They just had stickers that they were police scooters. And so they cycle people through these things so much because it's the only thing they had for transportation.
Please tell me you have a picture of you on a scooter in your equipment somewhere.
I don't because I never got scooter certified.
A smart man. Well played.
And I was going to bike school, but I didn't want to go because I knew I was taking a spot from somebody. And at that point, I had to tell them I was leaving, going to my hometown agency.
Oh.
And so they were not happy. They liked me. And so like they brought me and they were nice about it. They're like, hey, how do we get you to stay? And I'm like, I'll make $100,000 in 3 years. And at that time here, that's what the captain made that I was talking to. I could tell you his name. And I was like, $100,000 in 3 years. I'm like, what do you make? He's like, I don't even make $100 here. And I'm like, yeah. He's like, well, you got to go then. I'm like, I know. It's 3 years. Top pay here is 28 years, which I've never even heard of in my life. And you got to pay for medical. This was, you know, really a creme de la creme place to be in New Jersey. And by the way, the federal pension had no accidental injury pensions. So if you were,
We
had a guy who lost his foot and came back with a prosthetic foot because he needed a job.
And there was nothing he could do.
Most of the dispatch there at the time were injured cops that they like were just trying to do a favor and made them dispatchers to give them a job because there was no pension.
Mm-hmm. Mario's just going,
It's wild, dude.
Yeah. All right. So you have to go back to the police academy. Third time.
Yeah, dude, that was a fun one. Right. Now 4.5 years into the gig, right? I got experience, right? 4.5 years is not. I wasn't there for 3 months. I got time on the road. I got car chases. I got time in the jail. I got a lot of time in retrospect. And I'm a recruit all over again, man. And it was a hard pill to swallow.
I understand that because I had to go through. I left recon as a, and you don't have to know what all this means, but I left recon as a platoon sergeant. And then I went back to my old unit, but it turned into Marine Special Operations Command where Cody and I were. But I had to go through selection. And I'm like, what the fuck, dude? Like, how many times do I need to prove myself? They're like, nah, man, this is the cutoff. You got it. Like, you're good, but you got to go through the selection process. I'm like, fuck it. Okay. I'm already on a team. I'm in a team currently. I'm a leadership role in a team. And you got to go through selection. I'm like, fuck. I'm a staff and CO. And so I went. But once I went through, I was like, you know what? This is actually a pretty good thing. Like, they got a bang up job here. They did a good job.
And probably humbled the balls out of you too, right?
Yeah, it was a good little it was a good little thing.
A little kick in the nuts.
Yeah, a little kick in the nuts. It wasn't like super difficult because I had experience. And so a lot of the problems they throw at you, you know, I've done real world in other countries. So it wasn't like, you know, super difficult, but it was physically demanding, you know, stuff that I all knew. But once I saw it, I was like, oh, it's good that people go through this. I got my stamp of approval. Not that anybody needed it or who the hell am I, but I understand that feeling of like you've been doing the job for a long time and then all of a sudden you're like, oh no, you're at square one, motherfucker. Like go step in line.
And let me be very clear, I'm not declaring that I was some veteran. I wasn't. And to be honest with you, you know, I'm glad that I did what I did. I don't have any regret. I really don't want to go back to police academy, but it really gave me a perspective of how bad recruit training was.
Yeah.
And I mean the sense of like, you know, I just put a lot of thought into like, why are we doing this shit? Like, none of this shit fucking matters.
Yeah, it's just like
and they're doing it wrong. Like, I have real life experience. Like, we're doing things wrong here. And so it became like, oh, well, unless you're in fucking the town that we, because it would be like 13 of our guys there.
Yeah.
And like, well, maybe if you're not in that, like, now it became a joke. Like, they don't do it in that town, but that's how we do it over here. And I'm like, nah, nobody does that anywhere. Like,
So how long did you stay with that agency?
I think 10 years I had when I left, you know, I left on a medical disability because I got hit by a car and, you know, I did a lot of rehab work. I've definitely have limitations, on physically what I can do. You may look at me and say, oh, you look like you're in good physical condition. Well, yeah, because you remember something, my rehab, when I went through a rehab was about building muscle around my knee.
Yeah.
So I've continued to just do that to keep the stability of not. You know, if I would have gotten fat and not continued to work rehab for my knee, if you look at my rehab instructions, I remember seeing guys after I left, they'd see me at the gym, like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, bro, I'm not fucking paralyzed. My knee's destroyed. It's, oh, I've actually, it's funny because the doctor was like, you're going to need a new knee eventually. And they still actually have to cover it, by the way. Workers' comp still has to cover the cost of it.
So I don't you still know have your original. You still have your original knee.
Yeah, yeah. But the doctor was like, you're going to need a knee eventually, yeah. You know. And so now I've been like, whoa. Like, I turned 40. Nick, you wearing glasses yet?
Let's not talk about it.
Okay, that exactly. So just like my fucking eye doctor told me when I was 24 and I got LASIK, he's like, when you turn 40, motherfucker, you're going to be wearing glasses. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm fucking superhero. I'm fucking Peter Pan, bitch. Mm. Turn 40, bro. And I'm like, no way.
Something. There's some weird things happening. We don't need to go into it.
Are your balls down to your kneecaps yet?
No, I'm with Core Med.
Yeah, we're going to have fun. We're going to have fun.
Everything's cool.
You just wait. Hey, wait till you see me and Cody get together. Forget, like, we spent like a week together last year at my conference. Like, yeah, we're gonna have a good time. I'm a fight, like, you're gonna have fun with me, dude. We have a lot. I get fucking nutty. But yeah, man. Yeah,
what did you do in that last agency? What was your jobs? Or did you finish,
you know, dude, I was a patrolman. I was a firearms instructor. I senior patrolman on the list to get promoted. Field training officer. Dedicated fucking hard charger, right? Good friend to everybody. Learned a lot of lessons, became a much better human being towards the end than I was in the beginning. You know, I just didn't have good guidance. And
yeah,
what we do now is not only just train for the practical sense, but we also train for a mindset of like, hey man, compassion, humanity.
I want to talk
less judgment.
I want to talk about your exit though. You good on time?
Yeah, dude.
Okay.
Plenty of time.
So you didn't make the choice to exit. Not really.
I remember the doctor telling me,
yeah,
you're not going back to work. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that. I really explored that with him for a few minutes, and you know, then it became clear to me that like my life was going to change, but I trusted me, you know. So I it was very disheartening. The shock value was wild.
When did you get married? Because I'm gonna obviously this pulls into your
right
life.
Before I left.
Really?
So and the were, reason? Yeah. Okay. I was gonna listen. I met my wife. I knew in 3 weeks I was going to marry her. And so
awesome.
The reason we had to get married before I left was because she would be entitled to my medical benefits. I already had my son. He just beat us to the punch. We were going to get married no matter what. So I knew that I had to marry before I left in order for her to obtain the medical coverage that I have. So that's why we rushed married. We probably would have done more of a destination. We had a kid now at this point, right? Now we had a baby. He was a year.
Whatever. And you sign papers that the government recognizes that you guys are together. Whatever. Who gives a shit? But I get what you're saying.
And she wasn't like caught up in the cycle of wedding culture.
Yeah.
Right. It's like any other culture. It's like you join this club because you're going to make sure your thing looks like their thing.
Yeah.
And you want to say that you had your thing that looks like their thing.
Yeah. I get it. We're the same way. So
she didn't give a fuck about that.
Yeah. But nonetheless, you were with your wife. And so this doctor just says, oh, well, everything that you are and what you do is done.
Yeah. I actually went to a second doctor to see what his thoughts were on it.
Really?
And paid out of pocket. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, you're toast.
Fuck.
And I'm like, all right. He's like, well, you guys have a pension, right? And I'm like, no, I've been putting thought into that. You know, and I realized that this is coming to terms. I'm like, you know, and so I would have been promoted. On that list, more than likely. I think they went past the number that I was at, so they would have promoted me.
Did it crush you?
I think there were things about it that I didn't at the moment make peace with. However, I also believe that everything happens for a reason, and
even in that moment,
I look at it as like God was like, hey, look, I gave you what you needed to be able to come out here and do this for these men and women.
Right, of course. So like, but in the moment, I'm like, I'm trying to figure out where your head was at in the moment. Because so many people, I wrote a book about that.
I mean, who isn't scared when your life is abruptly changes like that, right? So who doesn't have anxiety of like, what am I going to do? What if I don't get a pension? You know, nothing was guaranteed. What if this doesn't happen? What if that doesn't happen? You don't know yourself at 33 years old.
But in the moment, in the moment, you were like, everything happens for a reason. I trust myself. I can figure this out. Because I was not like that.
I am not a loser.
Yeah.
And I mean that in the sense of your boy here doesn't know how to lay down, stare at the ceiling, and die. I'm not saying I don't have to disengage from life at times and just take a breather, throw some real motivational, inspirational YouTube shit on purpose because this trip I'm on is a little daunting.
Yeah.
It is not an easy fucking ride, and I really, really want people to know what they're getting involved in when they try to do some shit like I'm doing. It's fucked up. It just is. It's fantastic. It's wonderful.
No, and I'm with you, dude. It's hard. It's fucking hard.
Fucked up.
It's hard. Like,
it's fucked up.
Yeah.
On many levels. So you better be fucking resilient with good emotional quotient. Like, I can't cry, which is probably a good thing for what I'm involved in. I really want to cry a lot. You know what I mean? Like, dude, I really wish I try to like actually evoke crying. I try to like trigger it like a dam breaking, and I'm like, God damn it, just fucking cry already, you son of a bitch. Just purge this shit and get it out. But I have other ways that I've developed to cope. I don't want to say cope because I don't want to make it seem
now,
that way. Like,
is that that's now but is it that's now, but then did you then?
I was probably a little more at that time in the earlier stages of learning more about becoming a better person and who I was. And, you know, starting to get perspectives on different things as well. So
you're like what?
30, I don't think I was, 30, I don't think I was ill prepared. I just knew that
35 years
old. I was
old?
33 at that time. 33. Yeah, 33 going on 30, I was 33 and a half. So I was going on 34 and, you know, I just trusted me.
Okay.
And I just knew I was never somebody who would not figure it out. And even to this day.
How'd your wife take it?
She was scared. She's a kid. She's a young girl. You know, she's 9 years younger than me, right? So she's a kid. She has no career. We have a baby. We're living in half of my two-family house, right?
Well played, sir, by the way. Well played.
Oh, it gets better than that. But I got to tell you, like, in a very intelligent person, but maturity-wise, we were on the same page. I am not somebody who... Dude, I'm either... There are three people you get with me. You either get a 41-year-old man, which you're talking to now, a 21-year-old man, or a 12-year-old man. And that dude, that constantly... And I'll be honest with you, Nick, rarely the 41-year-old man's here, just so we're clear.
I hope to
have typically 12.
I hope to have the 12-year-old boy down in Boca. That's going to be fun.
You're going to have the 21-year-old boy in Boca, so we're clear.
Okay.
Yeah. Unless Sid's bringing out, like, jet skis and like, stupid shit, like, and, like, fucking, like... But I am... At core, the happiest when I'm acting like I'm 12.
Awesome.
Love it, dude. Be a fucking kid. Love being 12 years old.
Yeah. I think the older I get, the more that I'm like, yeah, man, this is the way. This is be a kid.
I like playing wiffle ball. I like, bro, I'm the guy who comes up with the craziest shit at my house in the neighborhood. And people are like, who came up with this? And I'm like, you're looking at them. They're like, you're the one who decided to put three snow tubes on a fucking quad and drip 15 kids around at the same time. And I'm like, I had a dream. It was like the Sandlot when the fucking babe came to you. I can't stop conjuring up more stupidity with the children in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
Like, bro, I'm a bro in the hood. Like, that's I roll awesome. Around on a bike with everybody else. I'm a bro.
I need to bring my little man up there to you because he's a firecracker.
He won't leave, bro.
He'd love it.
I told somebody yesterday, if you bring your kid to my house, you can anticipate that in an hour you will come back. Your kid will be sweaty, red-faced, having the best time of their life, and maybe injured. But your kid will not want to depart from the Bonino household.
Does that not sound like Dimitri's, like, M.O. 100%?
Absolutely.
That's like his... That sounds like heaven for that kid.
Yeah. Nick, my children will indoctrinate them into their tribe. And he will get...
Come up with, like, blood war paint on his face. No shirt, barefoot.
I'm not kidding you, like... Don't think that your kid's not going to get into shit with my kid because that's they awesome. Can't stop being insane. I have a zip line in the basement, dude. I have I have rock walls. I have, you know, we have, I think, 7 or 8 power sports in my garage. We have two dirt bikes, side-by-side, a kid's side-by-side, a Razor 200.
Yeah.
That does 30 miles an hour, and it's fucking super dangerous as fuck. It's so goddamn dangerous. It fucking even makes me a little nervous. I've got a 6-year-old that drives a Sportsman 570 2-up, which is a, if you went to a power sports place like a Kawasaki Center or some shit like that, you would go, holy shit, look at that fucking thing. How much is that thing cost? That thing's fucking huge. My 6-year-old, who weighs 42 pounds, drives 48. Was he 47 pounds now? He rips this thing like he's a pro. And I had to say to him the other day, listen to me. I don't want to stop you from being adventurous, but if you roll this thing on you, you're going to die. You understand that this thing weighs 1,000 pounds. This thing weighs 850 pounds. If you, and he's like, what? And I'm like, I know what you're doing. You're getting bored with what you're used to doing. Now you want to try to push the fucking limits here and see how, but the consequences of this thing
is death.
Are significant.
Yeah.
Bro, people look out their windows and watch my kids riding the streets of our neighborhood.
What did he say? What did he say to that? What was his response?
They look at me like I have 10 fucking heads, and they just behave differently when I'm around. And I know that the minute I fucking turn my back, he's doing what his father does. His father's wild.
Yeah.
Dennis comes out. Dennis is a wild dude. I just can't help my dude. I'll tell you one quick story. My wife had her 25th birthday, and this, everybody just knows that I'm fucking out of my mind, but in a fun, like I'm not a bad person. I'm just a lot of fun. I just don't give a fuck. And I'm ready to just break everything in the interest of having a blast. And so her friend Emily, said, I rented jet skis. We had a jet ski. I rented a jet. We had a lot of people with us. So I had a jet ski, but we rented one additional. We had a pontoon boat and my ski boat as well. And so, we were trying to pair up who was going to go with who. And she's like, hey, I'm going to go with you on the jet ski. And I'm like, all right. I love Emily. I'm like, yeah, for sure. And she leaned into me. I'll never forget. She's like, you're going to just be an asshole. And I'm like, yeah. She's like, that's why I picked you. And dude, I sunk a jet ski that day and almost broke my nose. Thankfully, somebody saw us from the bank on the lake and raced out. And I was just covered in blood, bobbing in the water. This is my wife's 25th birthday. And I'm just literally covered in just streaming blood out of both nostrils. She's cracking up. I'm laughing. She's in the water. The jet ski's going down. This guy just throws a rope. We hook it around the front of it. And he just starts. He's like, get in the boat. I'm like, thank you for saving us. Right? And so,
how the fuck do you sink a jet ski?
Because if one, they sink. They don't float. They'll float temporarily. But I couldn't get it rolled back. A big machine. I couldn't get it rolled back over.
So it was upside down.
It was upside down. Started going under.
Oh, man.
You can pump the water once you get it back. You got to go into the hull, pop, take the seat off.
Yeah.
You got to have a pump, like a bilge pump, and start pumping this fucking thing out and get it. You got to hit the fucking spark plugs with spray to get it started again. But the whole thing's flooded. It's still an engine, right? So it's a marine engine, but it's still an engine. So that paints a little context of how much of an asshole I am. I just can't. I cannot. Dude.
Hey, man. My father got this. Listen, life is meant to be lived. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, dude. Listen, my father. So my cousin who works here. My father bought a new ski boat. So he got it in early spring.
Yeah.
Wanted to go on the water with it. It's probably 55 degrees out. So I says, well, I'll come and take a look at the boat. Well, I wanted to help him with it a little bit, learn about it. My cousin came up and her boyfriend, she works here. And she'll tell you that if I bring her in right now, she'll tell the story. So, dude, it's cold. Everybody's in sweatshirts. And so I'm driving the boat. We're probably doing about 40 on the lake, right? There's nobody on the lake except us. And so I said to my father, I go, hey, hold the wheel for a second. And my cousin's like watching me because she knows it's just, you never know what I'm going to come up with. And I just literally just ran off the back of the boat into the lake. And the lake's like fucking 65 degrees. And he's like, why are you such a fucking idiot? And I'm like, I just couldn't help myself. I just saw an opportunity to make everybody laugh. And my cousin is cracking up. No, I'm in a sweatshirt and jeans floating in the lake. And why would I? And he's just like, why would you do that? I'm like, I'd make everybody laugh. I thought it was really funny. You know? Just that's how I live my life, dude. I just think, how dumb can I be?
No one cares. Not really. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, sorry.
So you get out of, you get the bad news. What was the pivot mm-hmm. point? What was the pivot point there for you mentally and what did you actually do? The street cop training come right after that, immediately?
It's a long story and I don't want to eat up too much time. I had... Yeah. Begin to dabble in my entrepreneurial spirit, which I probably should have done when I was fucking, which I did do as a young kid, but I probably should have stuck with it if I had somebody to help guide me. A lot of people will say to me, I don't know why you were ever a cop. And I'm like, well, this is my life and that's the route that I went and essentially just had nobody to direct me where I should have went.
The thing is, though, I'll kind of counter that because if you wanted to be a cop since you were 12 years old and then you had been you know, 40, 41 now.
I would have done ride-alongs as a fucking millionaire.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have unfinished business, you know what I mean? And there's nothing worse right. for a man to have unfinished business. So you did
correct.
It.
Correct. And this is why people cheat on their wives.
Right. You did it. You got it done.
I remember telling my wife when I was 30, she was like, I'm like, hey, you know, you're in good shape here. We're dating. And she's like, why? I'm like, I have no interest in hooking up with anybody else. I actually, matter of fact, 4 months before I met you, was like, well, I'm done with this. I am just done with these girls. You know, so, I just was. And I have no interest. I just don't have a fucking care in the world. I was single for essentially 12 of my 12 years of adult life.
Yeah.
I was a wild dude.
I understand.
Wild guy. Had a lot of fun. I understand. A lot of fun girls.
Yeah.
You know, had a lot of fun. I was a, we'll be going into that with my therapist soon. Why did I act that way?
Yeah, same. But I've had the exact same conversations, and I've heard men say that when I was younger, and I just could never comprehend where I was at then. But now I 100%.
I mean, dude, I remember being with a girl who probably most men would have given their right arm to even experience.
Yeah.
And being like feeling nothing.
Nothing.
Like even in the fucking act, right? And I'm like, man, I've literally had this thought. She couldn't see me. You could imagine the position. She was just looking somewhere else. And I remember saying to myself, you know, this girl was, I mean, I don't want to say too much because I don't want to say too much. But I remember saying to myself, what am I doing? Like,
what the fuck is this?
This is so fucking old.
Yeah.
This means nothing.
Yeah.
Like, this means fucking dick. So, you know, as at that point, for me, I'm glad that I did what I did, but I was looking for deep, meaningful relationships, and yeah, that's what I found with my wife.
There's very few things that I look back and go, yeah, I would do that differently, or, you know, just, and mainly because, you know, the nerd in me, you know, talk about timelines and things like, I'm really, really stoked with who I am and what I have now. And any deviation from any of that, any of the bad decisions, any of the mess ups, any, you know, or whatever that I experienced in life, might have changed the outcome of where I'm at today. And I'm fucking really stoked where it is today. And so I, you know, not to be cliche, but not, you know, trying to not have regrets and not look at things from a different perspective. Like, hey man, that's what it was. It was all learning. The good, the bad, the indifferent, whatever it is, it led me here.
And I still make a ton of mistakes today, just so we're clear.
Oh yeah, of course.
Like I make a lot less, and I'm much more less. Of like,
yeah,
I'm much more into like not learning things the hard way.
Yeah,
but I make a ton of fucking mistakes, dude.
But it still moves forward, man. You still move forward. So going back to that, like what was the journey from trying to recover and start your own thing?
I didn't get a pension check. Well, first of all, I didn't always get my pension until after I left. And once I got it, we were still like, you know, just surviving on fumes. I didn't get a pension check for 4 months, which I did get back pay on, which really like was like, oh, I could just breathe there. And like, oh yeah. My God, it finally came. Like I can pay all these fucking bills. Like, holy shit. Mm-hmm. And I had gotten into real estate. And which is, let me just also preface this. If you think getting a real estate license is going to solve your problems, please let me come to my fucking house so I can strangle you. Because it's not, it is very few people that if you think turning to real estate because you know your fucking realtor got a $7,000 commission check on the sale of your house, you're going to sell a house to your cousin Pete. You're going to sell a house to your fucking friend from high school because he found out that you sell real estate. He doesn't know any better. But you're not going to sell any more houses than that every year. So I promise you that most people, like 99.5% of realtors fail. Because it's not what you think it is. You need to know how to run a business. You need to have those those skills.
You can do good.
It is not real estate sales.
Yeah, you can do good, but you've got to get your shit together.
You have to have a set of fucking pre-engineered genetic skills that I just don't think you can learn if you don't have some predisposition to being able to know how to navigate through things like that.
Yeah.
I promise you, you don't. And there's nothing shameful about going to get a job and making six figures working for somebody. You need to know who you are.
That's the trick. That W-2 job, that's the start for over $100,000 or more a year. That's the fucking That's the trick to level up.
But that may be the only solution for a lot of people. And I got to promise a lot of people who are listening, like, if you're getting that and that's who you like being, I had a, my brother-in-law told me one time, he started running a business and I was like, where are you? He's like, I'm fishing. I'm like, how are you fucking fishing? You just started a business. How is that possible? And so one day he said something very, and he's my best friend, dude. Like I'm emotional about the dude. I love him. I have never had a relationship with a brother. And I love this guy. Like I love him. I never knew what it was going to feel like to love somebody unconditionally the way I do with him as another adult. He's a canine guy in Maricopa County, Arizona. And it's no secret. People know who he is. So if you guys work with Steve Stryker, that's my brother-in-law. He's my best friend. I love him with all my heart. He knows that. He loves me with all his heart. And, you know, he said to me, he's like, I just want to work for somebody. And I'm like, bro, it's the best thing you've said so far. And that's okay. Right? If that's what you've recognized about you at this time, he's a young guy. He's 22, 23. I'm like, go get a job. There's nothing you should be ashamed about of getting a job. I mean,
no, it's what number two, it's what you do with that money after the fact that to me it matters.
There's a lot of things that matter, but the number two guy at Microsoft, I think, was the second at one point the second richest guy in the world. He wasn't Bill Gates. He was the vice president, and I think he traveled the world with two yachts. Remember that guy?
I don't know.
He had two super yachts that were they cost like $50,000 or $100,000.
His name?
Hold on, I'll tell you right now. But the point is like he was number two. Was it number? You don't have to be number one to be a big winner.
You don't have to look it up. Mario can look it up.
He's on the screen. I'm looking it up too. I mean, he was the vice president of Microsoft. I don't know if he still is VP of Microsoft. I don't know who he is now, but the story is a story. I don't know what his name was. But dude, I remember watching many documentaries on, he literally had like two, he commissioned and bought two cruise liners. And like literally had one just in case the other one didn't work. And they went in tandem together. It was like a 400-foot yacht. I don't know who it was.
You know how it is. Two is one. One is none. You got to make sure your shit's covered, right?
But I remember like they were like, I don't know at that time what they cost. But they were like $200 million a piece.
And then what does it cost 100,000 to run them?
Ridiculous. Like 100,000 a day to run them a piece.
Yeah.
He said vice president?
Some shit like that. You talk about three, maybe even more. Maybe.
Can't hear you.
You said VP?
Yeah.
He was the VP or top three at Microsoft, but he had two yachts and traveled the world in these yachts.
Is it Chris Williams?
I don't know the fucking guy's name. I just know the story, Mario. Okay.
Well, it looks like Chris Williams. I searched it. Who is the VP of Microsoft? And it says Chris Williams.
Well, who was the Microsoft VP that... that had yachts.
All of them have yachts.
Yeah, but this was like Paul Allen.
Paul Allen. I do remember that name.
I guess that's him. It looks like that.
Yeah, Paul Allen. I searched the same thing. Paul Allen comes up.
Yeah, 414-foot luxury yacht.
Good for
$278 million, and he had two of them. Oh, behind the Paul Allen's 100. So he had a 414 and a 126 that cruised behind, 126 meters. So he had two of them, some shit like that. I'm telling you, I've seen episodes on this guy. Literally, here's these yachts.
The smaller yacht is where the staff stayed. That's their yacht. That's their quarters. He stays on the bigger yacht.
I was in Mykonos, Greece this past summer, and like the things that pull into those. And why? I'm with people very, very.
Why, Dennis? Huh?
Why I go to Mykonos?
Why fucking Mykonos out of all places? What are you, 22?
Well, because that's where I'm part of a mastermind group. That's where they had the retreat because those guys are wealthy and they like women and partying.
And gays.
I would think that some of them like dudes too then.
No, dude. There's there is a section there, but I gotta tell you, it's a significant party scene. Mykonos is like top 10 places in the world to party.
That's what I'm saying. You're 41 years old. Why the fuck would you go to Mykonos?
No, I did a little bit of that, but we went with the group, the mastermind group there.
No, I just know.
Dude,
everybody goes to Mykonos. Everybody goes to Santorini. There's just really better places in Greece.
I understand, but I wasn't in Greece with the intention of really enjoying the Greek culture.
Oh, okay.
I was there to chop it up with people who were significantly wealthy and to enjoy some
check
fun time.
My friend went there. He I actually saved his vacation because him and his fiance went there for a vacation. And he just does what everybody else did. And he had a little bit of money. So he was having a good time and went to nice places. he got off the boat and like on, there was cabanas on the beach. You've probably seen them. And he got off the boat, landed, got his bag, and he looks over and there's just two dudes in a cabana just going to town.
Yeah. I guess that must happen and that's fine. I have no care in the world what like, they want to do with their life.
He goes, oh, okay.
Welcome to you Greece. Look the other side. There's fucking. See, so people don't realize about Mykonos. It's like the Nashville of Europe.
Yeah, right.
It's all European bachelorette parties that are there. Yeah. Now, I also want to tell guys who are listening to this: if you're single and planning to go to Mykonos, you're stupid because the only girls you're going to hook up with in Mykonos are American girls.
Yes.
And the good news is there's not a lot of American guys there, so those girls are very desperate for American guys. I will also say that you probably hook up with UK girls and Australian girls as well.
Fact.
You are not hooking up with a Greek girl. You're not hooking up with an Italian girl. And you're not hooking up with a girl from Spain.
Not there.
And so if the people who are not worldly travelers don't know this, those girls have no interest in American guys. Zero, zilch, zit. Want nothing to do with it. I made friends with a lot of them. They don't even look your way. They don't think you're funny. They don't like the dancing. They don't like anything about you. It is, they want nothing to do with your ass. So if you think you're going to go to Greece or Italy or Spain and hook up, you're not. You're better off going to fucking Scottsdale, Arizona, which is the motherland.
I'll second that. But hey, if you ever want to go take your family, text me first. I'll hook it up.
You're Greek, dude. It's very ingrained in your culture. You probably get there and you're like, opa, and shit, whatever the fuck you do.
That's exactly
right. My point is like, for you, it's probably, I don't know if it's necessarily a place you'd want to bring your family. I wouldn't bring fucking kids to go see the ruins. They don't give a fuck.
It's rock. Dude, it's Greece. You can pick up any rock anywhere and it's ruins. That's just that's all of Greece.
But the point is like, dude, like I brought two of my kids to Florida last year for our conference scout.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like, dude, set up everything. Gatorland Zoo. My kids are fucking fun. You know, SeaWorld, which is fantastic. I think SeaWorld's one of the best parks there. You know, we did Universal. They hadn't done that before. We've done Disney. Yeah. And they didn't give a fuck, dude. For more than 3 hours, just like, yo, can we go back to the hotel and go in the lazy river?
So we can fight each other? Can we just get back to the hotel so we can go to war?
All my kids wanted to do was hang out. Because we're having our conference at the Gaylord Palms this year. It's literally at the entrance to Disney.
Yeah.
And... We have two cool speakers we already have contracted to. I don't know if I should reveal mine. How long do you guys post edit these? How long before these go out?
When's this going to go out, Mario?
It's probably going to be 3 weeks.
Okay. So we'll be announced by then. We have Ronnie Coleman coming for this one. Kurt Angle. Yeah, Kurt Angle's coming. We got a few. We got some other big boys that we're cooking up. You know, Cody's coming back. We have a lot of people, like a lot of your social media influencers will be there.
That's awesome.
Like a lot of people are good like, for you. Yeah. So we have a lot of those guys coming back, but
Kurt's awesome. The Angle family is just awesome.
Yeah. Kurt's a good dude. Yeah. He'll be doing the podcast too, but the Gaylord has a fantastic water park. Like it's really good for people who stay there. And my kids didn't want to leave. They were just, that's what they wanted to do. And you talk to you have a 3-year-old. I mean, you just wait, dude. Well, I'm telling you, 6'7".
I also have a 21-year-old and a 17-year-old, but I started over.
Yeah, which is fine. But you're going to see, I don't know if you've experienced this. I don't know if you were different parts of your life at that time. Everybody plans these massive Disney trips and these fucking they don't want to do that.
Nah, we're over that.
My kids don't want to do that. Like, if I went to Disney, I just know that I wouldn't buy, like, the 5-day pass. I would be like, why don't you guys tell me when you want to go and we'll fucking go.
Dude,
Get him to a water park, dude.
Yeah, we just got back from Greece, and my 3-year-old there, he just was like, one, he was just with his mom and dad 24/7, so that makes him stoked. And it's Greece, so he's like barefoot and wearing a pair of shorts, no shirt. He's like, yeah, I just like my belly out. And he's just running around Greece in the parks and running around the house and running around the beach.
Hairy man bodies everywhere.
Yeah, he was like, this is life, man. He didn't need anything. Nothing.
You know what I found out about Greece was interesting? It's like, I didn't realize how close Greece was to the Middle East and the culture and all that shit. Because I have like a lot of really close Greek friends. You know, I grew up with one of my best friends is like very Greek. He's married, you know, his parents are from Greece. Like I spent a lot of time for years with I worked with him. So he's one of my best friends at work. So I was at his house nonstop. I'm still very good friends with them even years later.
Yeah.
He's like, my mother always asks about you. I'm like, yeah, I got to come by and see her. I was very much ingrained in the Greek culture, and it felt here very Italian to me.
Yeah.
Right? It did. But in Greece, I'm like, this feels very Middle Eastern.
Careful.
To me.
Careful there, Dennis.
But do you feel that like a little? Like, dude, you're 300 miles from Egypt.
No.
Right?
Very different. Smells different. Sounds different. Tastes
different.
No,
I get that. But I'm saying, like, people don't realize, like, Greece is, like, very arid. It is a desert.
Yeah.
Like, Mykonos is just dirt.
Very, yeah, it's all very dry. Yeah, it's all very dry.
So, like, it doesn't look like these rolling hills of grass and trees. It's just, like, dude.
It's just dry shit.
It's just, like, so it's like the desert,
still,
right?
Still produces the most amazing fruits and the most amazing things, which is wild to me.
It was cheaper than I thought it was going to be. That's one. It wasn't expensive I thought it was.
Shit,
and I got to be honest with you.
You should get off Mykonos and see what it is.
Cheap, right?
Bro, when we were broke, I almost, because I go every year to go visit my family. One year, I think this is the year that I filed bankruptcy.
Jesus.
Yeah. Rough year, right? Like,
my fucking bet, dude.
Just starting my entrepreneurial shit. Like, everything goes sideways. I lose everything. File bankruptcy. My wife is like, you have to go. She found tickets. It was just me and her. She found tickets for $650.
Round trip.
Yeah. Peace. She's like, we're going. She bought them. We had, like, I want to say we were there for 2 weeks. I want to say maybe we had $250 cash to eat for the whole time.
Yeah.
And bro, we ate like fucking kings.
I know, dude. Remember kings. Sitting down looking at the menus because people like warned us about meat and I was like, it's so expensive, da da da. Yeah. I'm like, bro, like, first of all, I'm going to say this too, and I don't mean to sound rude. Number one, what people don't realize, like, yo, every motherfucker on Mykonos is fresh as shit. Like, haircuts and fades there are legit. Like, every fucking dude on in
it's lined
in
up
Mykonos,
real sweet.
Bro, they're fucking, like, I was like, yo, I'm going to get a haircut. Like, I was like, yo, make sure, like, you give me a haircut. Like, lasts a little bit. I'm gone for 10 days.
Yeah.
Tell my barber this. And I'm like, yo, I'm getting fresh in Mykonos, bro. Their barbers are legit.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Everybody's fresh as fuck.
Yes.
Everybody is.
Yes.
But I got to tell you, I'm from New Jersey, so I'll preface that. And in New Jersey, the competition in restaurants here is significant.
Right.
I travel this country. I'm not saying there aren't good places. I'm not saying Texas doesn't have fantastic barbecue.
Right.
I go to Terry Black's and fucking Heim Barbecue.
Dude,
I'm not saying that I didn't go to fucking St. Augustine last year and have beautiful barbecue there. I'm saying overall per capita, you can't fuck with our food.
Yeah.
You just can't. I would actually argue that probably some of our Italian food here is better than the Italian food in Italy. And I haven't been in Italy, but I've talked to people who have been there. No, but dude, like, I watched Portnoy's reviews. Like, you know, he was just in Italy. He was there for like 3 weeks. And he's like, you would think everybody has great. This is shit.
Compared.
I've heard people tell me, like, the pastas in certain places is very good.
Yeah.
And the food's really good. But, like, you'll hear people from New Jersey and New York who are like, you know, yeah, it's hit or miss. So to blanket statement that I was very unimpressed with the food in Greece. Just the truth. I'm not saying I didn't have some stuff that was okay, but there was nothing memorable for me there. We ate out a lot. Every place.
It's because you're in Mykonos. That's why.
Okay.
Watered down. So we had $250. We'd sit down, the two of us. That was then. This hasn't changed much. I mean, have a full dinner, 5-course meal. $8 maybe?
Yeah, wow, that's crazy.
That's it. Lunch?
We were having...
Lunch to two of us, $4.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. With tip, everything.
Yeah, it's crazy. We were obviously spending more, just that we're used to Jersey prices.
Of course.
So if you go to a nice restaurant here,
yeah,
two people out to dinner, you're talking $250, $300.
Yeah, man, I'd drop... Right? We go take these guys to dinner, man, and easily drop $500, $600 like that. Not even that great, to be honest.
No, here you get you get some, like, you know, there's probably 5 to 10 restaurants within 20 miles of where I am right now that you'd be like, wow.
Yeah.
Like, if you came here, Nick, I would take you to one. And you'd be like, I would work it up. I'm like, yeah, it's going to be the best steak you ever had. And you'd be like, the fuck out of here, dude. And then you have it. And you're like, dude, it's actually the best steak I ever had. I've actually had people who've denounced their food. From, like, we had a guy who used to work at this company from Maryland. So I was like, hey, we went out to this one steakhouse here. And I'm like, you should get the crab cakes here. They're fucking fantastic. He's like, I'm from Maryland, blah, blah, blah. You don't do crab cakes. And he actually said, he's like, these are better than Maryland crab cakes. I was like, I fucking know, dude. He's like, they're just different.
This is not news to me. I've heard when you're in Jersey, people like to eat. So they do it right.
I think that this is a state where there are a lot of foodies. Yeah. I'm not saying people are also fat here, don't get me wrong. But in order to compete at the highest levels here, I'm not talking about you're sitting down with a fucking tuxedo on.
Yeah.
In order to compete at the highest levels here, you've got to have a very, 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 very good product. And unfortunately, I think a little bit what's happening right now is every steakhouse is beginning to copy each other.
Uh-huh.
And so you're finding similar shit that's all really, really good, but at the same, it's the same fucking menu everywhere now.
Yeah.
You know, tomahawks are huge here. Like, you know, you're getting Wagyu beef here now. Everybody's doing the same goddamn Brussels sprouts, the same potatoes. Nobody's really come up with anything unique at the moment, to be quite honest with you. But they really, don't get me wrong, dude. This is like, these places are like 9.5s, bro.
That's awesome. I do need to get up there. And now I just want to bring my son just to see what happens. Just set him to make him feral.
So bro, let me tell you right now, like, open invite, dude. If you're ever coming up this way and you want to bring that boy, like, dude, I take people's children from them and put them into my house because that's where they prefer to be. Third youngest son, you saw his friend's father at a tent at an event they had this weekend. So his son was there. I go, I'm going to leave this one with you. He's like, well, unless you want to take this one with you. And he went, I can go with them. And he's like, oh, shit. He's like, bro, I can't ever even mention going to your house to him because then he's like already putting his shoes on.
I'm out.
And dude, I took his son and he just became feral, right? Grew hair, grew tusks, and just started hitting the fucking woods with these lunatics.
Fuck yes. Yes. Good for you, dude.
Open fucking door, dude. Bring him. You know?
Good dad moves right there. So, hey, Street Cop, when did you start Street Cop training?
2012.
Okay. Well, it's been a minute, man.
I've been doing it over almost 11 years.
What was the motivation?
I was so frustrated with everybody doing things so fucking stupid.
It's kind of going back to what we were talking about before. Just like, let's do this for real.
Let's do it. Guys, there's... We can improve, like, we can save yourself so much fucking headache.
Yeah.
Here's what the law says. Here's the permitted actions you're allowed to do, good or bad, contrary to what you think. And a lot of people are like, well, I didn't know we could do this. I'm like, yeah, it says it right here.
How did you know? Go ahead.
No, and then, like, you know, like, hey, like, there are better things we could be doing with our time. There are better ways we can behave. There are better ways we can behave towards each other.
Mm-hmm.
There are better ways we can do things tactically. Here's some thoughtful advice on life. Let's start pointing the things that we're doing wrong out so we can start fixing them. You know, unfortunately, that comes some detriment.
Yeah.
People get very frustrated when you start fucking holding things accountable.
Yeah. How did you navigate working with agencies versus working with individual cops?
I didn't navigate anything, and I've never been one who begged people to come to my training. You know, essentially, I did my first class. It was complete dog shit, but it was fucking fantastic. So if that makes sense to you, you know what I mean? Like it was so shitty compared to what it is now.
Yeah.
But it was still so much better than everybody else's.
Real quick lesson on entrepreneurship here is sometimes you just pull the trigger. Like, you just do it.
Dude, I live by this. It's a Les Brown statement, and I fucking live by it, and I give it to everybody. It's jump and grow your wings on the way down.
There you go. There you go.
Like, fuck that shit, dude. I remember, I tell this story. People like this one, and it's very quick. And so I signed the contract with Harris, and I was on the hook now for $100,000 pre-COVID. And then my first conference. And that was just to start, bro. Like, that wasn't not, like, it ended up coming, like, dude, you thought, like, we're going to spend $100,000. Ended up being like $500,000, right? So... I came home and I remember taking my shoes off from Atlantic City. I drove, came home. And at the time, my wife was like, how was today? And I went, I signed the contract with Harris. She goes, what does that mean? I go, I owe him $100,000 no matter what happens. And she said, well, what if nobody comes to your conference? I said, I thought about that. And she goes, well, what do you even know? Now she's looking a little at you. She goes, well, what do you know about running a conference anyway? And I said, what have I known about doing anything? And I never forget this moment. She goes, you're right. You're right. You haven't known it. I'm sure you're going to figure this one out. So I How's this conference going to look? I don't know, but it's going to be the best conference that's ever been done in law enforcement history. And I promise you that. I just don't know how I in my mind, I know what it's going to look like. I just don't know how I'm going to make it happen. And
yeah,
we put it on literally as soon as the pandemic fucking kind of came to a close, and it was still fucking crazy. And mad motherfuckers got COVID at that conference. Like, you know, they just did. Yeah. And it was the best conference ever in law enforcement until I did it a year and a half later in Nashville this year. And we outdid ourselves again. And now I have to figure out how to outdo myself again in Orlando. Dude.
Good for you, man.
Ask Cody what it was like at my conference.
I talked to him.
You talked to him.
Yeah, I talked to him.
Yeah.
It was killer, man. I watched all of it. It was awesome to watch.
We murdered it.
Yeah.
We murdered it.
That's congratulations, dude.
Somebody said to me, "You guys make this look easy. That's how you know you did it really well." And I go,
"As long as
you should see behind the scenes,
as
bro.
Long,
like,
as long as it looks that way, right?"
Our staff behind closed doors, like literally laying around, like they were fucking refugees.
Yeah.
And like had been on a like just in the desert trekking for 9 years, and they just like needed a break.
Dude, an in-person event, like a conference to put on. I've put on three. Dude, it's no joke. It's no joke.
Oh, they're wild.
It's wild, man.
Do we have a lot of stuff figured out more than before? Sure. But it doesn't mean it's easy. It's
no, but it's, but you know, if you take away all of the before stuff, when you do the conference, when you get people in person to person, it's just a beautiful thing. You can do all the online shit that you want, you know, the podcasting and everything. But when you get people to commune together and to communicate and to talk about the things that we talk about and the things that you guys share at these conferences, man, it's just a beautiful thing to watch change happen, watch perspectives change. It's awesome.
Our community of people who believe this organization is the redemption of law enforcement and who believe that we are the new coming of law enforcement, and how we feel about them and how they feel about us, because we're all one, is fantastic. And we do our very, very best to remind everybody that we care about them tremendously and spend as much time with them as humanly possible.
Dennis, so thanks for, man, for everything. Guys, go look at who can attend your seminar or your conference.
Well, I'll give the plugs here.
Yeah,
this will make life easy for you. If you want to find out about our conference, StreetCop.com. Going to be a fucking fantastic conference. Any of our training, we have on demand. We have StreetCop University coming out, which is a subscription-based police training. Going to be fantastic and blow everybody's minds. Really going to be a nice solution to having consistent training for police officers throughout the country and throughout the world, to be quite honest with you. StreetCop.com is where you can find a lot of that stuff. You can check us out on every social media platform by putting StreetCop in. And then we also have the StreetCop podcast as well. And we're not hard to find. You could TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. We have a Facebook group for police officers only. We have a public Facebook group. We have about a little over a million followers at this point. So we're not hard to find. We're not some, you know, I'm not saying we're big potatoes, but we're certainly not small potatoes either.
We'll definitely push that to the Agogi because we got a lot of law enforcement in there as well. So Dennis, dude, thank you so much, man. I look forward to linking up with you in a month. And
not even, dude. I think it's like fucking 3 weeks, bro.
Jeez, I don't know. Time flies, man.
Yeah.
All right, guys. You know the deal. Never quit. Oh, tag him. Tag Street Cop. Tag me. Screenshot this. Share this with a friend. You guys know the deal. Other than that, never quit. Never surrender. Always forward. We'll see you in the next one. Peace.
Peace. Hey guys, check out our upcoming training at StreetCop.com. Don't forget, we have 50 instructors nationally teaching a variety of topics. These are the best classes you're going to experience in your career. We make sure of it. You're going to love it. I guarantee you, you're going to be thankful that you went. Check us out at StreetCop.com for all upcoming classes in your area.